Welcome again. This is the second exercise session, and I shared the instructions for the home assignment. So let's begin with them. Just have a short glance. So here. Most importantly, the deadline is beginning December, and this is the absolute deadline. And you will be graded from 1 to 5. Then there are some general instructions. One important detail is that you're expected to make proper table where all the relevant, that includes all the relevant results, and a proper table looks like this, for example. For sure, it does not have to look this stylized as in a scientific journal, but the main idea is that everything relevant is in the table. But everything do not have to be as stylized as in a scientific table. And overall, the home assignment has 6 different parts. So, for example, this week we will be going through ARMA modeling. So if you want to beginning your assignment, you already have the code to do, for example, out of sample forecasting, which we will go through today. Next week we will go through VAR modeling and co-integration. And fourth week, CARTS modeling, and then some nonlinear modeling, week 5. So this is the general structure for the paper. First of all, you have to first the cover page and then the content, and like a scientific article. It consists of this following part: introduction, some literature review, then description of data and empirical methods, then the results and some discussion, and ends with the conclusions. The length can be anything between from 15. I'd say that 15 is like the minimum number. But 30 pages, it's like a, it's not that strict upper limit, but nevertheless not too far away from 30 pages. And then you have a few different options. And when you start doing after the demonstration sessions, that means after the 5th week, I'm going to help you with the assignment. And this is done by, so this means that we're going to have 3 online sessions where you can come and ask questions, and I will help you with the coding. And these sessions is the fifth demonstration sessions is on the 14th November, and this is the week after. Then there's a second session 2 weeks after, and last session is on a Monday, the same week when you have to return the assignment. So that's the beginning of the week, and that's the short session. So the main idea is that I will help you with few extra details during the last sessions. But you should be well on your way here. And the deadline is again 5th December, so that's just before the Finnish Independence Day, that's the 6th. And then I believe there was three different themes. This one theme is theme one, and so these are the instructions for the theme one, and then there's theme two that's about the paper that's shared from Juha Junttila and Vataja. And third possible theme could be, if you're on your way doing your master's thesis, you could also do the home assignment using your master thesis as a material. So, for example, in the theme one first, there are different alternatives. Choose some set of countries you're most interested in, and then you start doing the analysis. And in the first part, you're, for example, doing ARMA modeling, and this is something we will go through today. And here you will do, you're required to do one step ahead forecasting. I'll show you also that, how's that done today, and so on. And then there's a second and third, fourth part. So you have any questions related to the home assignment, or should we get going? Fine, so the demonstrations today, we have three analytical exercises, exercise one through and three, and then three computer exercises, fourth, fifth, and sixth. So in the first analytical exercise, we're asked to check the stationarity of the model. So first of all, you have to be able to define the stationarity and what that means. So a weak version of the stationarity is that your model has a constant mean and constant covariance, which in this case means that constant variance. Those are the two main characteristics to remember. And we're in this exercise, we're examining the stationarity through characteristic function. So let's see how that's done. So you're able to see the written version of the model here. It's a autoregressive model of order two. Economically, the AR order measures the persistence of the model. So, for example, if you look a Let's have a short look at the inflation index, for example, euro area. I'm afraid the picture is not perfect, but here you can see for example, this is actually percentage changes, and I have to have a look on a raw index. Okay, here's a nice chart. So, for example, let's have a look at the inflation index here. You can see the development of the index, and here you can see that there's a high persistence in the inflation that when it's going in the one direction, it will most likely to continue going that way. So in other words, the time series is not fluctuating randomly up and down. Rather, there's a strong persistence in the model. So one possible way to model this kind of persistence in a time series is using a autoregressive order. It controls that. So that's the intuition for the AI order. And this first exercise was about the stationarity of this model. So first of all, let's rewrite this model using a log polynomial. So here, what has been done in this line is that throw the lag one and lag two on the left-hand side of the equation and then rewrite the model using the log polynomial. Then, in order to check the stationarity of the model, we can do it like in that like solve. One way to do is to solve this equation as quadratic equations and see whether the roots are higher than one. So if they are higher than one, they are outside of the unit circle, and that means that the model is stationary. So as we have an equation polynomial of second order, let's multiply the equation using the constant term in head of it and then we'll replace the lag polynomial just by some random letter, and here the random letter is z. So multiply this equation by this term, and the equation turns into this or like this. And then just apply standard quadratic equation to solve the roots of the equation. So this is the beta term, and here in the square root, the first term is the square of beta plus 4 times a plus c. And when the both roots have been calculated, we observe that the first root or one of the roots is below one. So this is a sign that the model is non-stationary. This should be over one, or both roots should be over one, so that the model is stationary. Then the second exercise. The second exercise is about determining the optimal order of ARMA model. So here, there's a researcher. She has 200 observations, and she has estimated the residual variance for different candidate models, and then she has decided that there are no higher order models than free. This means that free autoregressive orders and free moving average orders. Okay, so here on the left column, we have the different models, different orders for the models. And then we have the log residuals. And we're asked to determine whether the order of the success, what's the best fit for, what's the best fit based on the information criteria? So here, You can see this Excel file. Here is the A is the first column and B is the corresponding log variance of the likelihood function. K here is the number of the parameters in the model. So here the first question is that we have an ADMA model 0, 0, but we have a one parameter in the model. So what is this parameter? It's the constant term. So in addition to the order of the model, we have to add one, and that's the constant term. Then we have 200 observations, and then we calculate the Akaike and Swartz information criteria. So for example, applying the formula of the Akaike information criteria, we can see that the model order of 3 and 2 has the lowest value, and the lower the value, the better the informational fit. That's, or in other words, lowest error in the model. So according to the Akaike information criteria, the model 3 and 2 is the best. Secondly, we calculate the Swartz information criteria. It's a little bit different formula, and the di main difference between the Akaike and Swartz is that Swartz punishes from the amount from the number of the parameters in the model. So it's a less parametric way to calculate the information criteria. So applying the formula of the Swartz, we get an answer that optimum order is 2.1. Which one of these to choose? The criteria is not the same. Now, it depends what you want to do. So usually, or what I would recommend in this case would be to use the Swartz information criteria, and the main idea is that it is less parametric, it is more parsimonious than the model of higher order. So in other words, when you start to add parameters in a statistical model, you're introducing complexity into the model. So there's a trade-off between the simplicity and complexity in the model. And usually it is the case that the more simple your model is, even though the model is maybe a little bit more unrealistic, your model is nevertheless better able to capture the processes in the data. Then the third exercise, this is about the autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation function. So here, okay, so this is about calculating the confidence intervals of these of the autocorrelation partial autocorrelation functions. So here we have given different lags and different values of the of these functions, and we're asked to identify the appropriate process for the data given these values. So the general rule of thumb for using these autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation function is to their behavior, the expected behavior of these functions. So for example, if we have a autocorrelation function that's slowly decaying. I think let's Google a graph again so that you can see immediately what I'm referring to. Okay, so for example, here in this graph, you can see that the autocorrelation function, well, basically these are I think this is a better graph. So, for example, here you can see that the autocorrelation function is decaying slowly. And then you can see that the partial autocorrelation function cuts to zero in second order. So in this case, when the autocorrelation function is decaying, but and the partial autocorrelation function cuts to zero in lag two, this is a sign that this could well be MI1 model. So given these values in the exercise, let's us calculate the confidence interval. And this is done by applying this formula here. So here the value of one, the value of almost two is equal to the test statistics at the 5% level. And then we multiply it by the inverse of the square root of the observations. And we'll get the value of round value of plus and minus 0.106. So given this value, we want to find where does the given value of the partial autocorrelation function cuts to the below this threshold. So let's look at the exercise again. Sorry about this. My daughter is sick and she's coming home from the school, so sorry about that. I put the noise off. So let's return to the exercise. So it was the third exercise, and the given value of the confidence intervals is 1.0106. So here we can see the value of the second order going below this threshold. So given that, we see that the partial autocorrelation function is has a this decaying behavior. It's getting lower almost all of the time. And the partial autocorrelation function cuts at the zero at order two. This is a. So based on this, we could assume that the model is M moving average of order one. And the B part, we are asked to calculate using Lundbock's test statistic to calculate the autocorrelation, test the autocorrelation of this model. So here again, like in every doing every statistical inference, we have to remember the three different stages of doing a statistical inference. What we need first is the null hypothesis. So here, our null hypothesis is that these lagged values are zero. That means that there's no autocorrelation in the model. Secondly, what we will do is that we calculate the test statistics. And from above, you can see that the formula for the test statistics. So apply, given the values in the exercise, we'll just block them there and calculate the value. And we get the value of C squared test statistics of almost 20. And then when we have the test statistic, we compare it to the proper values of the probability distributions, the so-called critical values. So if, for example, at the 5% level, the critical value is a little bit lower than 8. So when our test statistic is higher than these values, this means that we are rejecting the null. The null does not stay in power. And when we reject the null, we are rejecting that the model has no autocorrelation. So when we're rejecting no autocorrelation, it is more probable that the model has autocorrelation. Then let's go into the computer exercises. Exercise number four. So let's look about that. Just a moment, I'm just closing the door. Okay, so, exercise number four is about formulating and estimating ARMA model. So here we have this stock data from 1919 to end of the 2020, and this data is about S&P 500, Euro Stoxx index, and then in addition to them we have the so-called fear index, that is VIX. We are asked to do some preliminary steps for the data and then examine the data before doing box checkings procedure. So first of all, this box checkings procedure is a really old school version of doing time series, and its main assumption is that it assumes that the underlying model is linear. So let's begin with. So in the first stage, let's import the data and study them visually and then start doing the procedure. So first, we have to load the libraries needed and how to highlight this. Highlight, press, use shift and arrows. Alternatively, you can use also the pointer of the mouse, and how the run a command, it is control and enter. So here, let's first load the data. That's the ask data, stock data, and then let's calculate the number of the observations. In the first step, we are asked to calculate the continuously compounded returns. So as a short reminder of the how these symbols work is that from right, you can see that the name of the data is df. When you click that, you can view the data. Okay, now it's not loading. For some reason, it is loading really slow. So, for example, here you can see the first column is the date, and then we have this three time series. So, first of all, we calculate the returns. The dollar sign here specializes the column of the data frame, and here, square brackets. Define the number of the observation in question. So, for example, from 2 to n is specifies the number from 2 to the 259 with incremental of 1. That's the implicit assumption there. So let's take the data of all of this series. And after that, let's just have a look at the summary statistics of the indices. So here, the line above, the highlighted line, is the summary statistics of the Euro stocks. And the below is S&P 500. Just by comparing these statistics, you can observe that there seems to be close correlation between the series, with some differences that Euro stocks are more prone to the outlier behavior from even from the mean and maximum values. But then the mean value of the index, that is the mean expected return as a summary statistics, is a little bit higher in S&P 500 than in the Euro stocks. And then in addition to them, we have this fear index. So here, the economic interpretation of the values is the opposite of the values of the stock index. So in the stock index, higher the value, higher the change or the given return. Here, higher the value is higher the sentiment of fear in the market. Let's graph them, let's plot them. So first of all, this is the changes of the Euro stocks. So these are the relative changes. This is not a price level, rather the monthly changes in the of the prices. So here we can observe that there seems to be some volatility clustering and some heteroscedasticity in the model. That means the standard assumption of the OLS model is that there's no heteroscedasticity in the residuals. So here we observe immediately that this assumption will have some problems for the model. So for example, the time variability of the series is here something. Time variability of the series changes over time. From sometimes it is higher, sometimes the variability is smaller, and sometimes higher. So the variability of the series changes over time. Let's compare the price behavior, and then there seems to be a lot of outliers there's in this series. Extreme economic events. And when we compare the behavior of the Euro stocks to the behavior of the S&P 500, we see that they're correlating quite closely. The Euro stocks are a little bit more volatile, but overall, when one index is going upwards, the other is too. Then let's compare this to the VIX, that is the fear index. So here we can see, for example, here, August 2008, that when the both markets are crashing, there are huge drops in the markets, the fear is exceptionally high. So, in other words, when the stocks are moving downwards, the sentiment in the market is really high. The fear sentiment is high. So for short, these are moving in the opposite direction. Let's see how this is connected to the extreme events in the market. So for example, beginning the millennia, this line is the peak of the dot-com bubble. There was a huge IT bubble beginning this millennium, and this is the pop. This is the peak of the bubble. So before that, you can see that both indices are moving strongly upwards. So the bubble was building up here, and then after this period, the market starts to crash down. And the second line here is for the August 2007. That's actually the beginning of the financial crisis. So after this point, you can observe that the indices start to move dramatically downwards. Finally, the COVID-19 pandemic. So this is for the January 2020. So in January 2020, World Health Organization declared that the COVID-19 outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic was a global health concern. So shortly after, we can see that the indices crash. So this was a visual examination of the time series. Then let's start doing the Box-Jenkins procedure. First, so here we are trying to find what are the orders of the right model, true model. So in the first phase, we're looking just the autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation function. And here, if these figures would be helpful, we would expect that there's some decay, at least either of these series would have a decaying behavior, slowly decaying behavior of autocorrelation, and other series cutting down to zero at some clock. So here we observe that the autocorrelation function cuts to lag at order one. That means there's nothing there. If it would cut to zero at lag two, we would have some kind of suspicion that maybe this could be or MI of order one. And in addition, we observe that our partial autocorrelation function is all the time within these boundaries. So in this case, in the case of the Eurostox, just by looking at the autocorrelation and partial autocorrelation function is not helpful. Let me correct myself. Earlier I said that if earlier I said that if this actually I said it like sorry, never mind. I'm just mixing here. That was my mistake. Actually, I said the thing correct, but then it just reversed somehow in my head. So nothing there. So just by looking at the autocorrelation function and the partial autocorrelation function, we do not have any clues about the underlying orders of the model. How about the S&P 500? Okay, these graphs are similar. Autocorrelation function cuts to zero at lag one. So if in the case that the S&P, the partial autocorrelation function would be decaying gradually, and this would cut into zero at order one, we would suspect that we have a zero-zero model. However, here partial autocorrelation function moves all the time within the boundaries. So again, we have no clue. How about the VIX index? Okay, here. There's just looking at the partial autocorrelation function, that doesn't give us any clues actually. It's not well decaying, the series not decaying, but here the autocorrelation function cuts to zero at order two, so maybe there's some MI1 order in the underlying model. Here actually, also the partial autocorrelation function cuts to zero at lag two, so maybe there's also some sign of the AR1 model. But usually the case, if these graphs would give a hint that the underlying model is ARMA 1-1, they would be actually both be decaying. Here they are not. So again, not much here, but maybe some weak possibility of the MI1 order. In the second phase, or in the second part, yes, second part, let's calculate the information criteria. So first, let's calculate the information criteria using the Akaike criteria. It's oddly lacking. I'll clear the memory of the R so that there's not some unnecessary processes running below. So hopefully it will become a little bit quicker. So here, given the Akaike information criteria, it seems that maybe we have a MI of order one model. And this is just based on the small letters. Here we can ignore the capital letters. They are about the seasonalities of the model, and our data is stocks data, and there's no economic reason to assume that there's some yearly, for example, yearly lag in the data that you can make profit just by looking what happened a year ago. Of course, there in stock data there could be some seasonal effect in the sense that one of the most famous is the so-called January effect, that stock markets are going upwards during January. Sometimes the effect is there, but sometimes not. But there's no reason to assume that just by looking what happened October last year, there's a profit to be made. Then let's calculate the information criteria using the Schwarz information criteria, and according to Schwarz, the optimal order is 0, 0. So we got two conflicting answers. According to Akaike, it is MI of order one, but according to Schwarz, it's 0, 0 model. Then let's look at S&P 500 according to Akaike information criteria. According to Akaike, the optimal order of the S&P 500 is AR3 and MI1. So ARMA 3-2 model. However, according to Schwartz, it is again 0-0 model. So again, two different answers. How about VIX? According to the Akaike, it is a 1-1 model, and according to Schwartz, it is also 1-1 model. So here the information criteria give the same answer. So this is a better clue about the underlying model. The model that's created about the data generating model. So we got a multiple different answers about the right numbers of the model. So how to choose the right one? So first, let's estimate the Euro stocks using a MI1 model. So here, first of all, we have to be able to calculate the statistical significance of the parameters, because it doesn't print the answer immediately. So how to calculate this? T-test statistics is, first of all, you take the parameter, and then you subtract the hypothesis from it. That's the null. Is it different from the null? And from this diff and then you divide this difference by the standard errors of the parameters. So it's around 1.5. So for sure, that's well below the critical threshold, meaning that the model is not statistically significant. If you want to calculate the exact p value, you can do it in this way. Take the value there, and then degrees of freedom, it's the number of the observation. I believe I set it that to And then we have two parameters, one MI1 and intercept from the model. Let's see about it. Something is not right here. Okay, it's calculating the test maybe one-sided. No, there's something is wrong there. So let's forget that. So for short, our test statistic, the value of test statistics is around 1.5, and the critical threshold is 1.96. So as our test statistic is lower than the critical threshold, the null stays in power. That means that the parameter is not different from zero. So let's compare this result to the result. Let's estimate the Eurostock using the ARMA 3 and 2 order, like given from the. Okay, so according to Akaike, the optimal order is 1 and 0, and according to Schwarz is 1, it was 1 and 1. So estimating this model without any orders will not help us. So let's, for the sake of the, in order to move on with the model, let's use the information criteria of the S&P 500 and estimate the Eurostock using that information criteria, just to see what kind of results we will get. So, okay, here. The easiest way to calculate the t statistic is just to take the standard errors and multiply it by 2 and compare it to the just multiply it by 2 and compare it to the threshold value. Actually, I think it, the be best way is to do it like this. Just take the estimated value and subtract standard error from it and compare it to the two. So, for example, in the case of the order of AR1, the value is below 2, the null stays in power, the parameter is not different from 0. Whereas for the order of 2, second order, we get the value that's quite high. That's quite high value for the t-test statistics. For sure, it's statistically significant. But for the order of AR3, the value is not statistically significant. So if you take this value and multiply it by 2, you can see the relative difference between the parameter and the values, and you can conclude the statistical significance from that. But I think the easiest way is just to take this parameter and subtract the standard error from it. So both of our MI1 and MI2 orders are statistically significant, then the AR2 is also statistically significant. So we got a little bit better hint what the underlying process could be. So that's we're trying to find what's the true underlying model, the model that's generating the data. So, Let's simplify our model a little bit in order to see how the results will change. So let's us estimate ARMA 1-1 model. So here we find comparing these values when we removed AR1 and MI1, the values of these parameters were quite small. It seems that the values of the previous AR2 becomes the value of AR1 here. And similarly, the value of the MI2 becomes the value of the MI1. So this is a sign that this model is lacking a robustness. When we do these little changes in the model, we would expect that the results will stay relatively the same. If they do not, and when they change like this, it's a sign that the model, there's something wrong in the model. The model, there's no stability in the model. So why is this so that this model lacks some stability? So let's look at the graphs again. So we were estimating the Euro stocks. So this was the time series of the Euro stock. There seems to be a lot of outliers in the series. So for example, are we modeling these outliers? No, we're just putting some order of persistence or some order of error in the model. And for example, our model assumes that the error term behaves, the variability of the error terms remains the same throughout this time series. But when we look at this simple time series here, we can see for sure the variability of the time series is changing over time. Sometimes the variability is higher and sometimes smaller, but in the model, we're assuming that this is not the case. So it is no surprise that our model is not working that well. Obviously, we're not modeling this data right. So that was for the S&P Euro stocks. How about the same results for the S&P 500? Again, I will print the both models. So above we have ARMA 2 and 1, and below ARMA 1 and 1. So here, when we subtract 1 AR order from the model, we again observe that the values of the parameters change. They become something else. So again, this model lacks stability. This shouldn't happen. If the underlying model would be correct, these parameters values would not change much. They would be relatively same. They would be robust. And then let's look at, okay, according to the Schwartz and Akaike, 1-1 was the optimal order for the weeks. I think here the interesting thing is when we just compare these parameters is that MI1 order in absolute terms, MI1 order is higher than the AR1. So this means that when there's a shock last period, it will have a stronger impact. The memory of this shock will impact from yesterday to today more strongly than the persistence in the time series. So think about like this, that there's some persistence in the model that, for example, Nokia gives a ne negative quarter yesterday, and price plummeted, then this news impact will dominate the price behavior of the day, even though it happened yesterday. That was the VIX. Then let's move the third stage. That's about diagnostics of this series. So first of all, let's calculate the residuals of the Eurostoxx model. We estimated three different models, and let's calculate them. And just by looking the variance of the residuals, actually it is the lowest in the lowest in the ARMA 3-2 model, but however, we also observed that there was when we start to add parameters in this model, the stability of these parameters becomes the issue. So when we compare this to the ARMA 1-1 model, the value is relatively close, even though it's a little bit higher. So here, the smaller value is better in statistical sense, meaning that the model is better able to capture the variability of the model. However, here this model is better because it's more stable. However, we should remember this instability of the parameters. It's most likely the case that we are not modeling correctly the outliers in a series or the changes in the variability. So we have some deeper issues in the model. But if we go with these ARMA models with these more strict assumptions, this is the better model of these two models. So then let's calculate. Let's test whether we have autocorrelation in the residual. So the null hypothesis is no autocorrelation. Then we calculate the test statistics and compare it to the critical value of the probability distribution. And this gives us the p-value. And as our p-value is way higher than the critical 5% level, for sure the null will stay in power. No autocorrelation. So that's a good sign of the model. Just by adding AR1 parameter and MI1 parameter, we were able to control the impact of the autocorrelation, the bias created from the autocorrelation. Secondly, let's do the same thing from the S&P 500, calculate the residuals, and then check the raw variance of the residuals. Here, the MI1 has a even also slower variance than the MI21, so it's great. Earlier, we found out that the MI2 order, yes, the MI2 order was unnecessary. So less parametric model has an even lower variance of residuals, so that's a good thing. And then let's test the autocorrelation. The null hypothesis is no autocorrelation. And again, just by looking at the p-value, way much higher than the critical 0.05, the null stays in power, no autocorrelation. And then the VIX index, okay, here, let's just test whether it has autocorrelation. And again, the null stays in power, no autocorrelation. So for short, we got our preliminary result is that ARMA 1-1 model is the most stable starting point for doing analysis. If we would add some additional parameters in the model, we would introduce unnecessary complexity in the model, and our parameters would become less stable. So with ARMA 1.1 model, we have some, even though we can assume that our model is not, that there are better alternatives like CARTS models. ARMA 1.1 model is now the best option to go, given the assumptions we are doing here. Okay, let's do the fifth one, the forecasting, and then we'll have some break. So what does the exercise say? So forecasting ARMA 1.1, okay. From the previous exercise, we found that ARMA 1.1 is the model to go. Okay, we're only doing this for the weeks here, so that was the best choice for in the East case. So we have the whole data, and then we subtract into two subsamples, and then we start to forecast. So first, we need the first subsample for the estimation. So this highlighted line is the data for the model. That's the underlying data we're using for the forecasting. And this highlighted line are the realized values of this time series. So we calculate also them. We need them, these in order to compare our point forecast to the realized values. And same also for the second subsample. So for the first subsample, let's first calculate the model. So using this ARMA command, using to order 1.1, let's calculate the parameters, and then we calculate the dynamic forecast. So here for the 28 steps ahead. So here we have a constant sample we're using for forecasting, and we're using the same sample, the first sample, one step ahead forecast, and then after we've done that, we're using the same sample to forecast two step ahead from this forecast. And so on for the third step and until 28 steps ahead from the sample. So this is the forecasting we're doing. We calculated these predicted values, so then let's calculate the confidence interval. Those are the boundaries. And then let's see how our forecast is doing. So these are the forecasted values. So relatively quickly, our forecast will go to the zero. So that's because of the stationarity of the model. But let's first plot some other stuff there. These are the realized values of the S&P 500. And then the confidence intervals of our forecast. So here we can see that the realized values are bouncing within the confidence intervals. So this is a sign of the accuracy. However, if we looked at the scaling of this graph, the confidence intervals are quite quite wide, meaning that there's a huge uncertainty related to the time series behavior. So why is our forecast behaving like this? That it goes in the same direction than the actual value, but then it starts to go, then it becomes flat. This is because of the activation of the memory term of the series, meaning that our model reverts back to its long-term behavior. So our model assumes that this is the constant value of the series. And like you can see, these realized values are sometimes over and sometimes below it. So this is our forecast is the long-term stable value of the model. However, when we are interested in the short-term changes, for sure this is not very, very accurate. So in order to analyze more closely the short-term behavior, let's do static forecasting. This is one step ahead forecasting, out of sample forecasting. So here the idea of forecasting works like this. We have sample and we predict one step ahead after that. After this, we add one observations we earlier predicted to the sample, and then we again predict one step ahead. And then again, after this, we add a second observations and again predict one step ahead, and so on. So this is the out of sample forecasting. So let's see how our model is doing. Same graph as earlier, but the green line here is the one step ahead out of sample forecasting. So here we see that this out of sample forecast is not behaving how we would like it to behave. For example, here, sometimes it's moving in the same direction as realized value, but for example, here it's moving into opposite direction than the realized value. And overall, it seems to be the forecast of the model is inversely related to the realized values. So why is this so? Why is the model behaving like this? Remember to MI1 parameter, that's the memory term of the model from the last period. In absolute term, this is higher than the persistence of the model. So this means that the memory of the model is dominating the persistence of the model. That means that when there's a high shock in the last value, the impact is inverse next period. So why is this so? Because this model is correcting this time series behavior to the long-term stable value. So it seems just by visually looking at the two different forecasts that this really simple dynamic forecast that's The fat line is better than one step ahead out of sample forecast. But in order to statistically determine the goodness of the fit of the forecast, let's calculate some values, some measurements. Here, I'll do this a little bit. Let's put some extra lines there and print it again so it's. So the values above are for the dynamic forecast, the black line, whereas the values below are for the green line. So when we compare mean error, root mean squared error, mean absolute error, mean persistence error, and mean absolute and MAPE, if we compare these values, better the statistical fit, lower the value, better statistical fit. So when we compare these, it is almost in each case, the statistical measure is better in the dynamic model. That's the black line. And then there's a tiles test statistic. Here, the interpretation is when the value is below one, the model is performing better than the naive forecast. So naive forecast means it's a Martingale property. So expected value of the time series next period. Our expectations, what's happening tomorrow, is the same what's happening today. So that's a naive forecast that things tomorrow are like they are today. So that's naive forecast. So when the tiles test statistic is higher than one, the forecast is performing even worse than this kind of naive forecast. However, here in the in the dynamic forecast, that it's the black line, the forecast seems to be more accurate than this kind of naive forecast. So according to this, so overall, when we compare these measures here, they support that the dynamic forecast is better. So then this was for the first subsample. Let's do the same exercise for the second subsample. First, we'll calculate the dynamic forecast. And let's see how we're able to predict. I believe this was this COVID now. So now we're predicting. So okay, now we're predicting COVID-19 pandemic. So let's see how well our model is able to capture what happened during the COVID-19 pandemic. So here again, the black line is the forecast, really quickly reverting back to its long-term mean, long memory in the model. The blue line is the other blue line is the realized values of the time series. And then we have confidence intervals. So again, it seems that our forecast, the realized values stay in the boundaries of our confidence intervals, but the scaling is so high that there seems to be a lot of uncertainty involved here. And here again, like in the previous case, the MI1 order is higher than the AR1 order, meaning that the long-term memory is dominating the process in the model. Then let's compare this to the one step ahead out of sample forecast. So again, let's add the green line there. So again, our model seems to be performing quite bad. So here it's even more moving to the opposite direction than the in the earlier case. So again, it seems that dynamic forecast is performing better than the static one step ahead out of sample forecast. However, let's look at the statistical measures. Again, smaller the value, better. Again, when we compare these values, actually, there's now evidence in both directions. Okay, some measures point more in the direction of the dynamic forecast, and some point more to the direction of the static forecast. However, the tiles test statistic in both cases is higher than one, and this means that both of these models are really bad, meaning that if I had expected what would happen tomorrow in some share price just by saying it will be tomorrow like today, I would be able to make a better forecast than using neither of these statistical model. So that was the exercise number five. Do you have any questions? If not, let's have a 15-minute break and let's continue in 5 to 2. So see you soon.